good afternoon, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. They badge it in after Labor Day. That Tuesday after Labor Day, the day that referred to as the high holiday for parents and the start of the political season this year for a lot of us. Super exciting. I'm back in Minnesota today. No place I'd rather be, even on a cloudy, rainy post-Labor Day day. Just a day that reminds you that you got all those clothes that you can wear that you've been putting off all summer. Brett, I don't know about you, but I always think about that Monday after or that Tuesday after Labor Day with that same kind of tone that I thought about it when I was in junior high. Like, what are you going to wear to school that first day? And do you have a whole new school outfit?
That's pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
It's a curious time. But hey, so much happening on the political front. I've just been listening in and out today on this Kavanaugh hearing. And man, it's such a reminder, isn't it, that the consequences that come from our elections, they just hang over all of us, really, really meaningful. You know, you just think back to the times when our country could have made choices about not only who our president is, because how important that is, but who our senators are and who our congresspeople are, that the decisions that have been made over years start to pile up when you get a time when you're going to appoint a Supreme Court justice. And it's not entirely clear to me, Brett, I don't know how you're thinking about this, if the Republicans are going to just run roughshod over the Democrats or not. Do you think there's some chance? And I know that, you know, we're going to talk tomorrow, and I know that Matt was talking about this already with Amy Klobuchar. It doesn't seem like that's where the resistance is going to come from. That's necessarily going to come from her. So I'm just curious about if there's going to be any stand up and pushback that comes from the Democrats, or if the Republicans are just going to again seem to be the bully on the playground and run roughshod over the process.
I think you'll still see token opposition, which is mostly what we've seen today from Democrats who have to speak out against Kavanaugh and his views, and also the lack of documentation they've had. But yeah, I don't know if they'll be taking any extreme measures to try to slow this thing down. I mean, don't really know parliamentarily what they can do to slow things down even more than they have already tried to, but it'll be a matter. Yeah, if they can, I'd be happy at least if all 49 Democrats actually vote against Kavanaugh. I would at least take that as kind of a grain that things are sort of moving in the right direction with the party. Then there's nothing they can really do. But yeah, if even a few of these Democrats end up voting for him, then it's a little more depressing.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. You know, and that's a low bar, right? That's a low bar of accomplishment. That and not only a tit for tat, which I'm all for sometimes in politics, because that's how the game is played, right? That one party has to say, hey, look, it was pretty clear that you didn't take seriously our obligation to vote for a Supreme Court justice that we thought we should vote for. But on this one in particular, there's something in the air about Kavanaugh that doesn't feel right. There's some kind of hiding going on, and I don't understand where it's coming from and why it would be in the air. Well, I know we're going to talk about this tomorrow with Amy Klobuchar, but I watched her on Meet the Press yesterday, and she said there are things that we know are in these documents that are not being released, are being held under executive order. And I can't tell, people aren't going to get, they're not going to know about these things. They're not going to know about what's in those documents. And then she said this interesting line. She said, and there's things that I have seen that I can't share with the public because they're under executive order. They're under executive privilege, rather. And that's a scary proposition to me, that there's information that even Senator Klobuchar has access to and knows. And she feels like, boy, if people knew about that, that might change their view, but she can't give us access to it. This level of quiet, of secrecy. I'm being careful not to yet call it a cover up, because you want to save that phrase for the real thing, what it is truly a cover up. But there's some kind of avoidance going on around Kavanaugh. And this is the part where I think Democrats, the angle to take here, and I think all of us in the state of Minnesota should ask this of Senators Klobuchar and Smith, is in your role as senators, we think you should call this out, because this thing that is keeping secrets from the people of Minnesota, that's something that you just can't stand for. Like this is the deal that bothers me about our current senators. They seem to be wanting to play by some long set of rules of what is the proper decorum of being a senator. And I'm all for it. I think the decorum matters. I'm not a burn it all down kind of person. I think it does matter. But they also have an obligation to the people of Minnesota, and they have an obligation as senators in this country to all the people in the United States to say, we think that there's some level of corruption and cover up and secrecy that is damaging to the process. And if they would take that route, right, they don't even have to take the entire route of saying that that they're going to vote against him quite yet, but just we can't make a decent determination under these conditions. We need to put the brakes on and start ginning up the feeling in the country that this is a rushed decision that doesn't need to be pushed through so fast.
I think that's a good approach too, because it also kind of gives cover to some of these, what they rumor, red state Democrats that might vote for Kavanaugh just because they're feeling that political pressure. Kind of gives them a nice out saying, well, there's something in these classified documents that we can't talk about, and it's so bad that it doesn't warrant a vote until we learn more.
Yeah, see, I think that's the angle, and this is the part that gets me about Senator Klobuchar. I feel sometimes like she's clearly running for future office. Let's say I think she wants to run for the presidency or the vice presidency, and so she's trying to build a reputation of herself. Fair enough, but she wants to build a reputation for herself that gets her the kind of credibility of being someone who is someone who plays well as a senator, right? She wants to be that one who brings people together. And I think it's time for her to say, well, you can certainly do that, but you can be someone who brings others together while holding the hard line, while holding the call. And it needs to be a call for something greater than I simply don't like the guy, or, you know, everybody gets their choice. Every senator or every president gets their choice of who their nominee is going to be, and well, there's nothing we can do about it. That's the part that I don't quite hold to, and I think that's the part that where the argument could be made that what they really need to do as senators is say, on behalf of the American people, we believe it's not possible for us to make the kind of determination and to be sure that the people of this country understand what we understand, because we don't have access to this material. I don't know why they're not talking about that every day and all the time. I don't know why they're not putting up that fight. Now, maybe they know something. Maybe they believe that's not going to work. But, you know, as Matt brought up in his show in that final bit, just a little bit tired of people not of the Democratic Party not standing up and being strong. And I'm not one who says that you have to go picking a fight, but there is an argument to be made. And what I want our Democratic representatives to do is to make and win the arguments, right? This is the most important thing. The people in the United States, we're not buffoons. People are not fools. Now, it kind of feel that way when you know, so many of the country still can support Donald Trump and this Republican cabal. But we're not fools, and people know how to make a good decision. And if they would make the argument that you as the Republicans are making it impossible for the people of this country to make a good decision that they need to make and be able to obviously confirm this candidate that you think is so fine, we just want to be able to do the important work and the due diligence that we have to do. And I don't understand why they won't make that argument. Hey, Randy from St. Cloud, you've got a thought here on Senator Klobuchar.
Hey, thanks. This is a classic example of the difference between Democrats and Republicans. If you completely and exactly reverse this situation, mm-hmm. and there was a Republican who had information, guess what? It would get leaked. We would all find out, because they would leak it.
I see what you're saying.
The nominee.
Yeah. Well, it's curious because I get your point, Randy, and I think you're onto it, that if Devin Nunes had his access to this material, he would leak it out if it was going to harm Democrats. I agree with you 100%. But I will say, I think our Democrats have a better argument to be made by saying you're keeping things a secret than even telling us what it is that's being kept a secret, right? This is one of those cases where the fact that they're keeping it a secret is worse than whatever could be in the secret. So well, I think that's what they should lean into.
But you're not even hearing them say that. What they could say is, you guys are keeping this a secret, and because we know that if the secret were revealed, it would knock this nominee off the docket.
Yes,
but they're not even saying that, and they're trying to play nice and they're, you know, reach across the aisle and all this crap, because there's no reaching across the aisle. They're not. They don't want it. They're not going to let you reach across the aisle.
Yeah, so, I wish they'd play a little tug of war when they reach across the aisle and shake hands and then start pulling those Republican senators over to their side, right? That's the work of politics.
Right.
That's the work of leadership, is to woo, is to pull, is to cajole, is to move the center of the argument your direction. And I don't know if it's because so many people have taken the approach that, well, we just can't win, so all we can do is fight. I don't think you want to fight. I think you want to win the argument. And if you win the argument, you're going to win the votes. That's how it goes. You win the argument and you win the votes. Hey, this is AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota, kicking in after Labor Day. We're now in the politics season. We'll be back here after the break.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options, or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
Hey, welcome back. First day of school statewide around Minnesota. All the kids are back. All the teachers are back. Just want to put that shout out one more time. I know we did this last Tuesday as well, but to all of you school teachers that just finished your first day, thanks a lot. We all appreciate it. We consider you the front line of building an entire citizenry. There's a lot more going on in our education system than just babysitting kids. I mean, it can feel like that sometimes to parents, you know, who are just glad to have the kids get on the big yellow bus of freedom and roll off to school, whether it's for a full day or half a day. But there's a lot that goes into creating a system of citizenry and of connection. So I just want to send out that appreciation here on Back to School Day, the Tuesday after Labor Day, all across the state. Means the world to us. And now the rest of us, we got to get to work. We keep saying, hey, the political season really starts after Labor Day. Nobody wants to think about their politics until after Labor Day. Well, we're going to be thinking about it today. I'm going to be talking with Angie Craig. She's running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. It's people just south of Minneapolis, running against Jason Lewis. I am super excited about that race. I am super excited about Angie Craig as a candidate for her own right. We'll talk about that with her, but because I really want Jason Lewis to not be a congressperson from the state of Minnesota any longer. And I think there's a real shot at this win. And I'll invite you all to mark your calendars now for an event that I'm helping to run to make that a reality, both there in the 2nd and 3rd congressional districts. On October 10th, we're going to be running a Vote Common Good rally event here in the South Metro. So more details coming on that soon. But mark your calendar for that Wednesday night. And it's a part of a national tour that's touring around the country and inviting people to vote common good and to think about those candidates that would be best for all of us, not just the candidate that fits your own political agendas or outcomes, because we're living in a time that aren't like the others. These are unusual days in the time that we're living, and we need to take really seriously the work that we all need to do. It's time for all of us to step it up. So if you have a question for Angie Craig or a question for anybody running for Congress, and you want me to point that to Angie Craig here at the 4:30 hour, 952-946-6260. 0-5.
You don't get that phone number written down in front of you like we do when we guest host.
I do. I literally have it written down.
Oh, right, you do? There. Okay. All right. We have it in big block letters, so we're number. Now I can't even say if they're letters or numbers. I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. No, I hear you. No, it is funny how you say those, say these phrases all the time, and every once in a while, it just sort of clicks up on you. You know, it catches up. Hey, Brett, I was thinking about couple articles that you pointed my eye to, and they're interesting. That for the GOP, there's all this energy around the Republicans trying to make Keith Ellison the center of their strategy for the Attorney General, because that's not what it's really about, but sort of trying to pin onto Keith Ellison all this trouble that they want to try to apply to all Democrats. And it's curious how for a lot of us, we want to do that same thing with Donald Trump, right? We want every candidate to have to take on Donald Trump, and to be I want every Democratic candidate to take on Donald Trump, and I want every Republican candidate to have to take on Donald Trump and have to carry him with him to the voting booth on those days. And I think that's such a curious place that we find ourselves, that that each side is trying to pin all of this on someone. For Democrats, they want to pin it on Trump, and for Republicans in the state of Minnesota, they want to try to pin it on Keith Ellison.
Yeah, that's what their strategy completely is. It's not even about the Ellison race itself, as you were kind of alluding to. It's been, I forgot the name of this one super PAC, but they're running the same ad, but they're just copying, pasting different Democratic names, saying Joe Radinovich didn't call out Keith Ellison for so-and-so allegations, or it's Dan Feehan, or it's Dean Phillips, or Angie Craig, right, or anyone. That's the exact attack they're going with. And we talked a little bit about this on Matt's show, and I think he had a good response to this, and I kind of agree with this one as well, that, you know, that's fine if they want to attack on that, although I think Democrats have come out with a, you know, fairly decent response saying, you know, they want to learn more about these allegations, but they can say to Republicans, well, what about Donald Trump? Or what about Tony Cornish, who is the Republican representative who had to resign because of allegations? He resigned, but no one in the Republican Party was really calling him out. So that's at least the way I kind of counter that.
Yeah, the problem anytime you're dealing with Republicans is trying to say, well, you're being hypocritical. It's just they don't care, right? It's such a curious place to be. They just don't care about being hypocritical. Like, they set that aside a long time, or you're not sticking to your morals or your arguments that you made before, and you've pivoted into a new argument. They just simply don't care about it.
Yeah, hypocrisy has turned into a partisan issue, unfortunately, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that, and that's a real thing. It used to be that, boy, if you were a flip-flopper, I mean, think of poor John Kerry. If you were a flip-flopper, if you were somebody who changed your mind or changed the argument that you made as a politician from one vantage point, and you switched your argument to another, and you no longer talked about your first argument, people said, that's it, you're done. Like, you, consistency was the one thing everyone was demanded to preserve. And now the Republicans are just like, you know, we used to be against tariffs, now we're for them. We used to be for family values, now we're for the guy that brags about sexually assaulting women. We used to be for the people that said law and order matters. Now we're like, well, you know, the special counsel is not somebody you can actually trust. Like, they just have walked away from any semblance at all. And with no shame, with no sorrow, no Charlie Brown-like slunk head, and walking away as if you know, the football was just pulled from their foot. There's none of that at all. They're just brazenly kicking around and just saying, no, we talk about other things now. So it's really hard for Democrats to push back, because Democrats often find themselves having to say, like, well, I'm still back on your other argument that you were making 2 years ago. And they've totally walked away on it. And so this idea that Keith Ellison is someone that everybody has to explain, well, that's something that the idea that Republicans would be saying, you have a lot of explaining to do about the behavior of someone in your party, that they would even make that argument in the age of Donald Trump and of Congress people being prosecuted, and of the criminals that are surrounding the Trump enterprise, that they could even make that argument is so unbelievably brash. I just can't get my head around it. Hey, Brian from Spring Park, we just have a minute, but it looks like you've got a thought on the Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah, Rachel Maddow last night had a thing about Brett Kavanaugh, and there was a Mexican girl who was taken in by the Border Patrol and kept in Texas, and she wanted an abortion, and she was given the right to it, and they held her, and she went to court. And Kavanaugh's findings was basically, I'm going to hold off until it's illegal for you to get an abortion. Kind of really gives you the idea that he will be the Roe versus Wade flip. And 74% of Americans don't want that to happen. So I really want that to be heard a lot more.
I appreciate your point a lot, Brian. I think what you're suggesting is that in Kavanaugh's ruling, especially there on the district court, something very recent, it was clear how he was signaling his own view on this. And I sure hope that every senator in the hearings has a chance to raise that question, because he wasn't being careful about that run. Thank you, Brian. We appreciate it. Hey, we're back with Angie Craig running for Congress in the second congressional district here after the break. AM 950. Hey, welcome back to AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett here, really thrilled to be talking with Angie Craig, who's running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. Angie Craig, nice to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Doug, thanks for having me.
I've been excited about this for a long while, so it's a real treat. I'm excited about your candidacy. I'm looking forward to your win, and just want to let you know how much we appreciate people like you putting yourself out there and being willing to say that you'll take up the mantle of representing the 2nd Congressional District, in a lot of ways representing the entire state of Minnesota. So I'm a big fan.
Well,
I've
been looking forward to this rematch for a long time as well. So thanks, Doug.
Yeah. Okay, that's where I wanted to start. The idea of a rematch. How are you approaching the race this time, in ways that are unique to what you did a couple of years ago?
Well, you think about a couple of years ago, I was really just introducing myself to Minnesota. I spent 22 years in the private sector and stepped out to run for Congress in 2016. And I got within just over one percentage point of winning it during a Republican wave year. So this time around, I'm traveling around the district. I've done the heavy lifting of introducing myself. And frankly, I'm doing a lot of listening. I'm focused on this race here in front of me. And I really think this election's going to be about who can deliver results for the district on healthcare, who can help drive down the cost of healthcare, who's going to focus on reducing the cost of higher education and expanding our VOTEC, who's going to fight for another lane on Highway 35 around Lakeville. Who's going to fight for that interchange at Elko New Market? I think this race is going to be about, who's going to represent the 2nd District well in Washington.
I really appreciate the focus on those issues, because I do think that they matter, and they're obviously dear to you, and they're part of the reason you're running. And in your particular race, this is also about the person who's running, right? I mean, there is... Jason Lewis is a particular personality, and in and above the difference on policy and the difference on issues, how important do you think it is for people to pay attention to you, who you are, and how you conduct yourself, and who Jason Lewis is, how he is, and how he conducts himself? That's really important to me. I mean, that's part of the reason, in addition to the policies that I agree with you on, I'm really inspired by you and by your candidacy. How do you view that?
Well, I think, I'm gonna run on the things that I believe in and the things that I'm gonna fight for. I'm gonna talk about, reducing the cost of healthcare. I'm gonna talk about expanding VOTEC and infrastructure investments and getting the corruption out of Washington. On the other hand, Jason Lewis, as you mentioned, has said an awful lot of things about a number of groups of people over the years on the radio, and I don't believe Jason represents Minnesota values, but I'm going to let voters decide that on election day,
right.
And I'm going to stay focused on the things that I'm going to fight for on behalf of Minnesotans. And again, the voters will get their say.
on your website, which people can find at angiecraig.com, you have a nice little section that says Meet Angie. It's a typical thing on candidate websites, of course. And you start out with your own story and saying that you grew up in a family with, as you put it, with a lot of love and plenty of hardship. And I appreciate your sharing that and a bit of your own story of how you grew up and what it was like and how the programs in the government, as well as those people who supported you in you know, the private parts of your life, were so supportive. Can you talk a bit about what your experience in the early days of your life has done for you and has shaped your political imagination and how people should think about you when they walk into the voting booth, thinking about your own background and history?
I had the great privilege of growing up in a family that, told me that I could do and be anything that, I wanted to growing up. And the example that my mother and my grandmother showed me every single day is, my mom was a single mom. My dad left when I was 9 years old. And my mom took 9 years to go to school and work at night, raising us and get her college degree. And my grandmother went back to work at 60 years old, working in a union shoe factory, dipping heels in glue. And, there was a time in this country where if you were willing to work hard, if you were willing to earn it, that, this country would provide you your own version of the American dream. That's what I lived. I certainly had to fight for it. I fought my way out of a mobile home park. That was affordable housing to our family, and we were proud of the fact that we'd had to work and that we'd worked our way up here from where we started. And I think that ought to be available for every family in this country again. And the sad truth is, it's just not today.
That's right.
I worked two jobs to put myself through college. You can't do that anymore in this country. The cost of higher education is too much. I worked my way up to one Minnesota healthcare company onto the leadership team, and I had responsibility for about 16,000 employees, 4,000 right here in Minnesota. And we're not investing in vocational technical skills training anymore in this country. And I just think we've got to get back to a time where we're investing in Americans. Wages aren't rising, and you can talk about GDP growth until you're blue in the face, but if people's paychecks aren't going up, and it's not helping anyone. So certainly my own childhood, my own experience has informed, I want to fight for all Minnesota families the same way I had to fight in my own life.
And that's what I find so helpful, especially in the current state of the Democratic posturing and the Democratic messaging. I hear an awful lot from Republicans saying things like, well, you Democrats are the elites. This kind of condemnation that if people are open, if they're inclusive, if they're open to new ideas, that somehow being informed and believing in science and being inclusive of people in our society and saying things like Black Lives Matter, somehow that gets pitched as some sort of, I don't know, like West Coast or East Coast elitism that isn't really in touch with the real issues of people's lives. And I feel like the Democratic Party across the country and even here in Minnesota is in jeopardy of losing the narrative of being deeply connected to the issues of middle class and lower middle class people that are fighting for a place to in this society. Do you have that same sense? Do you feel that there's needs to be a special emphasis put on Democrats representing more base issues for people in the state of Minnesota?
Well, I spent a whole lot of time just traveling around listening to folks after this last election. And, what I'll tell you is that, I can't solve all the messaging problems for the Democratic Party, but I sure go around in my own district talking about how I promote and will fight for working families in this country. And when I talk about, that from a healthcare perspective, when I'm talking, it's from someone who grew up in her own family without access to health insurance for part of her childhood and has spent 22 years working in two healthcare manufacturing companies. So there's nobody in the world who is going to know better that if healthcare isn't affordable, it's not accessible to you. And, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, we can do a much better job of as Democrats is just, look, we've talked about access to health care for almost a decade, and we all know that made a lot of progress on health care. But at the end of the day, it's still not affordable for a lot of families. And so I think we've got to turn this conversation toward how are we going to stand up and fight the special interests that exist in Washington and help to lower the cost of health care. I think we've got to start, you know, talking to really what matters at the end of the day, our kitchen table issues. You know, if you can't save money, if you can't afford your grocery bill, you know, it's hard to think beyond the basics. And frankly, we can't forget that as Democrats.
I've got a couple of questions I love to ask people who are running for Congress. They're kind of standard. And that has to do with how you present yourself on your public space on your website. And I'm sure you know your website very well. And at the top, you have a couple of rolling banners. And I'd encourage people to go to angiecraig.com and to see the get involved button and the donate button and all that's there. And the selection of photos says something about a candidate. And the first one that comes up on yours is you surrounded by looks like your family and a dog right in the middle of it. So I'm going to put you in that hard place as a candidate and say you are a dog, not cat person. And
we've had both over the years, so we'll put it that way. But you're looking at our dog named Summit, Summit is not named after the beer, although the beer is very, very good. Summit is named after Pat Summit, who is the winningest basketball coach in history. So she was the coach of the Tennessee Volunteers for a number of years. We're basketball fans in this house, and in particular, Leafs fans in this house.
I gotcha. I'm going to stay on your website for a minute, and then after the break, I'm going to hit you with a little few more pointed, tougher questions. But what do you hope when people go to your website that they click on first to really get a picture of what you're doing and what you're up to and how you're posturing yourself in this race? What do you hope, and are you messaging that you hope people see?
Well, I think, you know, the Meet Angie section on our website. Look, I'm still introducing myself to a number of voters here inside the 2nd Congressional District. And if you look at that page, I wrote every word of it. What I want voters to know is I'm going to be straight with you. I'm going to tell you like it is. You know, when you look at that, the first thing you're going to see is I have a wife and we have 4 sons. Voters, you know, I talk about my family in exactly the same way that any candidate would talk about their family. And so, you know, I come from a background of humble beginnings. I've been given, you know, an extraordinary opportunity in this country. And, you know, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that this country is available to everyone. It shouldn't matter how much money you're born into. It shouldn't matter the color of your skin. It shouldn't matter what religion you worship or who you love. This country, if you're willing to work hard, ought to be available to every single one of us. And that's what we're trying to communicate. And that's certainly what I'm going to fight for as a member of Congress.
Angie, are there other people in Congress who are married to someone of the same sex? Are there any same-sex married Congress people currently?
Yeah, I think there are about 6 members who happen to be from the LGBTQ community in Congress today. Most of them are guys. And actually, it's interesting. I was told recently that I would be the first mother ever elected to Congress. You know, that's a mother who happens to be married to a woman, let me put it that way.
Yes. Yes.
And if you look at my website under news releases, you know, you'll find a story of me having to fight for my son, Josh. Josh is now, he'll be 21 years old in December, but all those years ago, another state wondered if 2 women ought to be able to raise a child, and we fought that all the way up to the Supreme Court in another state. And so, you know, when you get up every morning of your life and you wonder for 3 years, am I going to have my young son in my house to put to bed that night? That certainly has an impact on you, and frankly, it makes you unafraid of anything. Because there's nothing, nothing in my life that I'll face as tough as that fight. And so it really has helped shape the kind of approach I've taken to, you know, service in my community. It's you know, I'm going to stand up and fight for what I think is right, and I hope voters will give me a good look.
Well, that's part of the reason I'm a fan and a supporter. That's Angie Craig. Angie, you can stick with us over the break. Is that right? And let give us
Absolutely.
Another couple more minutes. All right. 952-946-6205 if you have some thoughts, questions, or comments for Angie Craig. We'll be back here after the break.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole, along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Hey, welcome back. Doug Padgett here talking with Angie Craig about her run to be our congressperson from the 2nd Congressional District, which, if you don't know your districts and where they lay out, that is south of the Twin Cities. And Angie, it is quite a large and diverse set of communities that you will be representing when you are a congressperson. And I would imagine that presents a particular challenge for any congressperson to have to consider all the needs and the opinions of people across the district as large and diverse as the one that you're looking at.
It really does. It's one of those districts where we've got about 20% rural voters and about 80% suburban voters. So, you know, I grew up in farm country in rural America, and, you know, I've lived in the suburbs for many years. So in a way, I think I'm the perfect fit for this congressional district.
All right. So I've got three sort of quick fire questions for you. What one of those has to do with where do you place yourself on the spectrum of the progressive side, the moderate, or a conservative side? And whether or not you like those titles, where do you place yourself in that run and in that spectrum? Because I know there's a lot of pressure for someone in a district like the one you're running to have to reach out to people who would see themselves as Republicans or conservatives. Where do you put yourself on the conservative, moderate, progressive spectrum?
Well, I don't even know what's on that spectrum anymore. I mean, you look at the current Republican Party, and what I would tell you is you know, I'm someone who is going to be looking for other, you know, members of the Republican Party who are also searching for someone who is a Democrat where we can find common ground. And, you know, I think on any issue, you know, you take the farm bill, for example. This has been the most partisan farm bill process in the House that, you know, we can remember. Then Colin Peterson can remember, he would tell you. And, you know, I think we've got to figure out how we work together in this country again. And, you know, I certainly have a set of values that I'm never going to compromise, but I also am the kind of person who believes I spent 22 years in, you know, in the business world, and you don't always get everything you want. And sometimes you're only going to get a piece of it, and you're going to have to, you know, progress or move forward. And I think what people are really looking for in my congressional district are, you know, elected leaders who are willing to work together and to try to get our country back on track.
Yeah, and there's kind of two ways that people hear that, that working together. One is that you don't get to fully be yourself because you have to give up something important to you. And to others, they would say, no, the way you represent the give and take is to know very well the needs, desires, passions, and arguments of people on the other side, but you never give up your own values. So you're not giving up 30% of what you hold to so that somebody else can have 30% of gain, but you fully represent your views and fully understand those who differ from you and be sure that they know that you represent them as well. Do you have a particular philosophy that you think you will utilize as you think about representing a wide range of constituents in the 2nd Congressional District?
I think the most important thing any member of Congress can do is stand and listen. And, you know, I know that's certainly one thing that our current congressman hasn't done. It took him almost 20 months to have a town hall, and even that required a ticket, and the room was half empty. So, you know, I think you've got to listen to folks where they are in terms of, you know, even when they don't completely agree with you or you them, and you've got to at least take some time to understand and empathize with that. I'm always going to fight, right? But, you know, I'm not going to quit the fight just because I don't get 100% in the first swing, right? I'm going to take 30 and keep pushing for 50 and keep pushing for 80. And I think, you know, I think that's the kind of member of Congress that I'm going to be. I don't like these labels, right? Because, you know, if you look at the pendulum for both parties, you know, we spend, if it's swinging left or right, you spend twice as much time in the middle, you know, when you think about it that way. And I'm just going to fight for what I believe in. And I hope voters will, look at my policy position. You know, I'm going to fight for what I believe in. But on the other hand, I'm always going to ask, what's it going to cost and who's going to pay for it? So, I think those are legitimate questions. And as a member of Congress, I think we have to ask those questions and be fiscally responsible, unlike, you know, adding $2 trillion to the deficit once you service the debt to give large corporations and very wealthy people a tax cut. To me, that was exactly the wrong priority to spend $2 trillion on.
For many voters right now in this cycle, thinking about what they're going to do in the next 60 days, opposition to the Trump administration and the Trump administration's way of being is a high priority. Like it is, there are people who are what I refer to as the newly enraged voters. They are mad in a way they've never been mad before, and they want Congress to do something about it. Some kind of restraint, some kind of pushback on what seems to be an incompetent and dangerous Trump administration. So outside of the typical flow of what's going to happen in politics, to a lot of people, and I'm one of them, there is a present danger and problem in this administration, and Congress and the House of Representatives is the first line to do something about it. How do you view that? Where do you view your motivation to as being a Congress? I know this isn't why you're running, because you wanted to be a congressperson before Donald Trump was the president 2 years ago. But where does opposition to the Trump administration fit for you and what you feel it will be your responsibility come January of 2019?
Well, there's no doubt that there's an element of just feeling like there needs to be a check and balance in this country among certain voters, and especially among independent voters. I'm picking it up just anecdotally as I talk to folks. But, you know, to me, I'm be honest. I just want to work on lowering the cost of healthcare, especially prescription drugs. I've got 22 years of healthcare experience that I want to take to Congress and fight to lower the cost of healthcare. I want to expand vocational technical education. Now we've got, you know, three sons who are out of the house. One is still a sophomore in high school, but one of our sons is in trade school, and I think. And our other two are in traditional four-year colleges. And, you know, I want to make sure that we have the right workers for the jobs we have in Minnesota. You know, I want that interchange at Elko New Market. I mean, you know, lots of folks are going to Washington for lots of different reasons. I'm going because I really want to fight for the infrastructure investments and the things that I believe are really going to help us grow the economy and put more money in the hands of the constituents in this district, because you know, at the end of the day, I want, you know, the income inequality that we're seeing in this country to be reduced. I want to fight to make sure every family has a fair shot, and that's why I'm running for Congress.
Thank you, Angie. That's Angie Craig. You can vote for her on November 6th if you live in the 2nd Congressional District here in the great state of Minnesota. Angie Craig, congratulations on your run, and all the best to you. Hey, Doug Padgett, we'll be back here on tomorrow